desire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again.
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton. Some rhythm.
And he got it. Young Ball continues to wear him out.
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Carter Rodriguez has bailed from the podcast. Yet again, he doesn't show up, but to fill in for him is my friend Jason Pat, host of the Cash Considerations Podcast, blogger for Bloggable. Jason, how's it going?
I am doing well. How are you tonight?
I'm doing not too bad. You know, another fun Cavs game, a big clash of the Titans, lost to the Washington Wizards, but that sort of thing seems to happen. You've met Carter in real life, right? Like you both, when he was living in Chicago?
Yep, multiple times.
Ugh, that's got to just be a hassle, right?
Totally. No, Carter's a great guy. It was always fun. We had like a sweet little like blogger group. We'd go out and like watch basketball games. And it was always a lot of fun. He's a good guy.
You're really not. You're not helping me out here. You're not giving me any dirt to work with here.
I can't say I really have any like real dirt on Carter. I'm sorry to disappoint.
So Jason says, for everyone listening at home, Jason says Carter is boring. There's no shady business going on with him. Believe it or not, Carter and I have actually not met yet in person, which is funny that we've been doing this for a couple of years. But you know what? That's the way it goes. I do want to talk, obviously, Cavs Bulls happening on Saturday. Another big showdown in prime time there. But both teams are kind of in similar stages where you're kind of figuring out who is part of the core. Obviously, Chicago's a little bit further ahead in that process. How are you feeling at this point of the season? Because it's kind of been a weird year for the Bulls.
Very, very weird. So the Bulls definitely were thinking playoffs when the year started. I was thinking maybe I did not pick them to make the playoffs this year, but I thought they could definitely compete. And I guess technically they still are competing for a playoff spot because the bottom of the Eastern Conference is a joke. But definitely did not expect them to be 17-29 with this record where they are right now. They started terribly. They had an easy start to the season, and they got off to a terrible start. Zach LaVine was bad to start the year. Larry Markkanen was awful. Otto Porter Jr. got hurt early November, and he's been out still. So it's been just definitely a disappointing season. They have been playing better against bad teams lately. We saw them that 19-point comeback against the Cavs where the Cavs just started turning the ball all over the place in the fourth quarter, and Zach LaVine hit a bunch of shots. It's basically with the Bulls, their whole thing right now is Zach LaVine hits a bunch of shots in the fourth quarter. The Bulls turn their opponent over like a million times, and that's how they beat bad teams. They can't beat good teams. They are 1-18 against teams above 500 and then 16-11 against teams below 500. So basically they're bum slaying. They've been really good against bad teams lately, but they still can't beat anybody good. So it leaves them here in this weird spot where they're kind of in the playoff race, but they're not actually any good because they can't beat anybody good. Zach LaVine has been playing at an all-star level lately. I don't think he's going to actually make the all-star game. Obviously, all-star starters came out tonight, and then the reserves, I think, come next week. I think he probably get left out because the Bulls suck and actual good players from good teams will make it. But he has been pretty good lately. Larry Markkanen has been still kind of a point of contention. Like, he started playing better as the year went on, after just an absolutely awful start. It was just a shockingly bad start to the year. He's been playing a bit better, but he still goes through these lulls where he's invisible. He just kind of just floats around the perimeter. Wendell Carter Jr. is here right now, so that's kind of a bummer. Like I said, Otto Porter's still out. Kobe White's been kind of hit or miss. He's had some really big games, but he's also had some really ugly games as well. He's a rookie. I mean, he's a rookie point guard. You're dealing with that with Colin Sexton last year and Darius Garland this year. So, yeah. Weird season. I really don't know what to make of it. I can't really take the Bulls seriously until they actually maybe beat a good team or two, because right now they're just bum slaying and then losing to actual good teams.
Yeah, it's a shitty thing because I think this season for the Bulls, I believe that I picked them to make the playoffs. I was a big believer in Otto Porter Jr. kind of having a breakout season, especially when you look at how he finished the year. I thought he was a candidate for kind of, let's call it like an 80% of what Harden had when he went from OKC to Houston, where I thought he was capable of handling the usage. Didn't play well at the start of the year, and then, as you said, got hurt. But it's tough to establish a proof of concept when you do have these major pieces that are missing. You have a decision to make with Otto Porter Jr., same with Denzel Valentine. You got to make a decision at the end of the year. And then, as you mentioned with Markkanen, it's kind of still that mixed bag. As you're heading into the trade deadline, do you expect the Bulls to kind of be a buyer or a seller? Like, where do you think that they're at in their thought process? Because as you mentioned, they're still just a win back. They're a game back in the win column from the eighth seed.
Right, yeah, it's such a weird spot. Like, there have been rumors about Thaddeus Young being traded. He's in the first year of his deal. He was the first guy they signed in free agency, mm-hmm. but he agreed to a deal in free agency. There have been rumors about the Clippers there, and the Clippers, apparently, they sent a scout to watch him. I don't think there's actually been, like, I don't know how much actual, like, talk's been going on, but clearly somebody's there with the Clippers. You mentioned Denzel Valentine. He's out of the rotation right now and not happy about it. I feel like he's definitely going to be traded.
Yeah.
I don't really know what, like, he's going to get you, like, by himself. Like, maybe you get a second-round pick or something, but really nothing more than that. Like, I feel like that's a situation where maybe you package Thad and Denzel and maybe hope to get a little something better. Maybe Chris Dunn's an interesting case because basically all – he was bad last season, and he was a guy the Bulls were looking to trade because they signed Tomas Satoransky in the offseason. They draft Kobe White. But Chris Dunn's kind of stepped into Otto Porter's starting role and has been decent. Like, his offense is still kind of a mess. Like, he can't shoot. He's been finishing better, and he's been one of the better, maybe arguably one of the best defensive perimeter defensive players in the league this season with the steals.
I've always been impressed by him defensively. Yeah. Like, he does a good job, and as you mentioned, especially with him starting out of position, that's impressive. Because point guard defense, I feel so frequently it's a function of the team defense, right? Like, where you have to have that communication, there's that help. But when you have a point guard that's actually capable of defending multiple positions, that's when it starts to really become an asset.
Yeah, like, he's been legitimately very disruptive and helped. The Bulls are right around top 10 in defense. I don't think they're really that good. And they've kind of – when they've actually played good teams, they've kind of stepped back. But as you saw against the Cavs, they turned the shit out of people. Like, I think the Cavs had like 25, 26 turnovers that game. I think the Bulls are forcing like 18 or something a game. They turned the Bucks over like 23 or 24 times the other night. The Timberwolves had like 9 turnovers in the first quarter. The Bulls, yeah, and that's all Chris Dunn. He's playing passing lanes. He's very aggressive. And the Bulls play like a crazy, like, blitz heavy pick and roll defense style, which it leaves them out of position a lot if it doesn't work. But they do force a ton of turnovers. Chris Dunn's a big part of that. I'm curious to see if they still maybe look at trading him. The fact that they're maybe this close to the playoff race and maybe they want to keep him long term, maybe they don't. I guess it would probably depend on if somebody offers up, if a contender comes and offers like a first round pick because they need a defense and another ball handler maybe. But yeah, I mean, if you're looking, it's probably Thad Young, Valentine, Chris Dunn are basically the main trade pieces. I don't really know how the Bulls would sell. Like, I mean, they certainly should not be trading any of their draft picks at this point. Like, they still need those. Like, unless they were trying to look to make a big deal. I mean, I guess they could possibly look to trade Otto Porter, but with that injury, like, I mean, that's, you're probably not going to get anything there. And he's obviously got a big, big contract. I really wouldn't expect that. So,
yeah, I'm curious with Otto Porter Jr. because I expected him at the start of the season. So, the Cavs are in a similar space where they're trying to establish a proof of concept. Big thing is trying to figure out which veterans actually want to be here for the rebuild. I think Kevin Love gave it an honest effort and has kind of established at this point that, hey, I don't want to be here.
Right.
It may be difficult to move him at the deadline, but I think it's clear that the priority is moving him. Tristan Thompson has expressed an interest in staying. Jackie McMullen and Brian Windhorst actually talked about that today on the Hoop Collective, saying that he's pushing for an extension and it's something the Cavs will consider after the trade deadline if he isn't moved. But if those veterans wanted to stay, Otto Porter Jr. was a guy that I advocated for. Hey, if Love still wants to be here and he wants to give this a shot, that's a perfect guy to try to take away from the Bulls, especially with no small forwards basically being in this draft. But I feel like with this injury and over $28 million on for his player option next year, I can almost see him opting into that, even though he'd probably be one of the best options available in this free agent class because it's just so bad.
Yeah, like, I don't know if he'd try to, like, obviously, like, there was, like, the Harrison Barnes thing where, like, everyone thought he was going to opt in, and then he opted out and got a long-term deal, but I think that was just Kings being, that's really worked out great for the Kings. Like, I don't know if the Bulls would have any interest in doing something like that. Like, injury thing just, I think, totally throws it off, because I thought he was going to have a really nice season. He was great after the trade, after he was traded last season. Like, he was a big part of the Bulls offense really taking off in February last year. Like, that was a big talking point for Bulls fans. Like, oh, their offense was so great in February. Like, Markkanen was great. Levine was great. Otto Porter was awesome. And that was, I think, part of the optimism coming into this season was, like, well, they'll take another step forward. Like, they're going to play a little more. They're going to play more like that. They'll play a little more of a modern game where they'll shoot more threes. They'll push the pace a bit more, and they'd actually have a good offense. And, of course, they have, like, a bottom five offense this year. And they were I think, with the worst or, like, second worst for a while. They've brought it up to, I think, like, 26, 27 now. But still, bottom five offense. Obviously, Porter not being there has definitely hurt, but I still thought they should be better than that anyways. But yeah, he's just a weird situation at this point with that huge contract with the player option and then this injury, which has been super mysterious. Like, he left the game in early November against the Hawks. It was like, oh, he's got like a foot bruise or like foot contusion. And then it's turned into this 3-4 month thing. And allegedly he might be back around the All-Star break. Like, I guess he was kind of doing some like non-contact work in practice. He was on the floor rebounding the other day, but who knows at this point? I guess we'll just
Jason, it's been tough for me because I was banking on him for my fantasy team this year. Yeah,
it's brutal.
And I had so many guys on my IR that I eventually had to drop him. So I'm keeping an eye on him because I had high hopes, but he's let me down. Something tells me that it's let you down watching the Bulls on every single game a little more than my fantasy team. But I'm very, very self-involved. So that's where my mind immediately goes. You mentioned Zach LaVine, and I think he's a fascinating guy because Twitter seems so divided on him. He seems to be occupying that Devin Booker space where people have kind of graduated Booker out of that space. But when you look at it, basically 25-5-4 this year, he's doing it efficiently. Last two seasons has had about a 57 true shooting percentage. He's putting up all-star numbers. And I think there was probably one spot on this all-star team for guy that's outside the playoff picture, but is exciting and puts up numbers and fans like him. But that kind of went to Trae Young, who was announced as a starter. Yep. It's almost a shame that you can't have, like, let's say Kyle Lowry, who's likely going to get in, have him elected as an all-star, but then have Zach LaVine play for him. I feel like Raptors fans would be okay with that because Kyle Lowry's basically there to take charges in the all-star game, and nobody wants that, both from an injury perspective and from an entertainment standpoint. But I'm a Zach LaVine believer. I was someone that thought it was crazy when people suggested that he would be the better of the two players between he and Andrew Wiggins. I think the Wolves thought the same thing, but at this point, it is clear. It is 100% clear that Zach LaVine is the better player. How do you view him, though, in terms of building a team and trying to get back into the playoff picture?
Right. So, with the Wiggins thing is great. Like, the Wiggins, like, the game last night with the Bulls, like, Wiggins had 3 points in the first half, and apparently Ryan Saunders, like, went off on him. And then he had 22 in the second. Like, it was just a classic Wiggins game, just totally invisible, and then he wakes up. Like, absolutely wild. In terms of LaVine, I would also like to say I'm kind of a LaVine believer as well. Like, clearly, obviously, right now he's the Bulls' number one option, and the Bulls are not any good. I think you can still probably argue, and Ricky and I have argued this ad nauseum on Cash Considerations, that he's probably not a number one guy on a really good team, just because he's one of the best scorers in the league. Absolutely. Like, he's averaging, after a slow start this year, he's been averaging like 28 points per game over like the last couple months. He's averaging like 30 in January. Like, the guy's going to get buckets for you. He's going to score efficiently. He's going to hit you big shots down the stretch. He can do that. But in terms of, like, actually, like, carrying a team, like, I mean, he was traded for Jimmy Butler. Me and Ricky talk about Jimmy. I guess we don't talk about it all the time, but he was a big part of the Jimmy Butler chain. We see what Jimmy Butler can do in Miami. It's a guy who can lead a team both ends of the floor and can just lift a team to their whatever, 30-13, whatever the hell the Heat are. I don't know if Zach LaVine can be that guy. Like, he's obviously, again, he can get buckets for you. In terms of being like an all-around, like, lead offensive initiator, like, decision maker, his decision making is still not great. Like, he's only got whatever, 4 assists per game. I think he's at like 3 or 4 turnovers a game. So, like, that's not great. That's obviously, some of that is a function of the Bulls just not being good, like, around him. So, like, is he like a number one guy in a really good team? I would still probably say no. But, like, if he was like a good number two to a legitimate, like, two-way number one, like, I think I could probably absolutely say yes to that. And like, he's also on like a reasonable contract, because you talk about it. I mean, obviously Devin Booker is really good, but you talk about guys, I've mentioned like guys like Devin Booker, Jamal Murray, Wiggins, these guys who've signed these max, basically not super max, but these max $150-160 million extensions. Levine's on a 4-year, $80 million deal, and he's one of the better scorers in the NBA. Like, totally reasonable there. He's so the Bulls.
Yeah, just shy of $20 million a year. Like, that, yeah. That is really, really good value, especially when you're talking about over the next couple of years.
Right. So, like, it will be interesting to see, like, where the, if the Bulls, if they don't make the playoffs, if they just kind of, if they end up with like low 30s, like, I'm curious if they'll look to trade him. There was an article out today about how he says he wants to be involved in like future team decisions. I have no idea if they trust him that much, if they'll actually do that, because year three of the rebuild, and if you're still bad, like, I mean, I don't think anybody should really be safe. But yeah, I mean, he's been really good. Like, you're definitely right on with the divisive stuff. He's still obviously not very good at defense. I think he's gotten a little better this year. He's improved at least getting steals and like playing passing lanes. Obviously, again, the turnover thing, like, he's helped play a role in that. He still can lose focus a lot on that end, and the Bulls give up a lot of open threes and shots around the rim, and some of that's on him. But I mean, overall, like I said, at the contract that he's at, he's one of the best scorers in the league. Like, see, will he make the All-Star team? Like I said, I think the coaches will probably, like you said, Kyle Lowry's going to make it, and there's a lot of competition there from players on good teams. You look at the Celtics guys, the Pacers guys, like Bam Adebayo. Jimmy was not a starter. Like, I think the coaches will probably trend towards those guys on good teams, and Zach will probably be like maybe the 13th or 14th guy, and maybe he'll get in as like an alternative.
The D'Angelo Russell route in where you just got to root for like three or four guys to die.
I don't think could be a really fun player to have in the All-Star game. Like,
he is,
he's just gonna chuck threes and dunk. Like,
come dude on. Is made for an All-Star game. Yeah. Like, it's that is a situation where he would absolutely shine, and I think it would also be fun to see him just play alongside that type of talent, because I agree. I think he's the type of guy that would fit in almost any situation, but just isn't that lead guy, which there isn't really any shame in that, right? Like, no. I think we're even seeing someone like Kyrie Irving, probably best as a number two. He is not someone that's going to elevate the entire team. But it does kind of – it raises some interesting questions, because I think team building is something that – people debate all the time. You see multiple styles, and ultimately we all know that luck has to be a major factor no matter what route you take. But you have teams like New Orleans where they emphasize, hey, let's get some veterans in here to help develop the young guys. You have teams like Philadelphia that just absolutely tore everything down. It seemed like Chicago was going the route of, hey, let's get Thad Young in here. That he's an absolute pro. It's amazing that he's still 31 years old, because I feel like he's been in the league forever. But just, hey, let's get some veterans in there. He's going to help the young guys. But it just hasn't really worked out this year. And I'm wondering if, let's say they do trade Thad Young and they're trying to figure out what's going on for next season, would you kind of want to see them try that again in bringing in another veteran, or what would you like to see from the Bulls moving forward here?
It's kind of hard to say, because like, I feel like if they do disappoint and they finish with like low 30s in wins, they miss the playoffs, whatever. Like, I feel like you'd have to change. I mean, I guess first of all, you'd say you fire the coach, and I haven't even mentioned Boylan yet. I mean, Jim Boylan,
good old Sarge.
I mean, he's just a goofball. Like, that would be the first thing I'd say: fire a coach, do an actual coaching search, and bring somebody in. Because again, I mean, they had him take over for Fred. The Bulls were an embarrassment last season, and then they gave him an extension for some reason. Like, absolutely ridiculous. I mean, he does goofy stuff every game. This last game, he called a up seven, calls a timeout with 5 seconds left because he wants to advance the ball because the Timberwolves are pressing. You're up seven with 5 seconds left. It's not the game end. Like, this game's over, dude. Just take it easy. And then he the stuff he says is always goofy. So, yeah, get a new head coach. In terms of the personnel, I mean, obviously you don't want to have a team full of young guys. I mean, we see issues with that. Like, a team like Atlanta, super young team, and they've been awful. Obviously, they had the John Collins thing and stuff like that, but like, they don't really have many young or veteran guys who actually can play real minutes. I mean, they have Vince Carter there, but I mean, He's 42, whatever years old. Like,
yeah, and things haven't exactly turned around with John Collins' presence.
Right, exactly. And they're still, whatever, 11-34, whatever. So, like, I mean, yeah, you probably have to make some more moves. I mean, you're not making any big moves, obviously, I would assume. Like, I mean, I guess if you want to, again, examine trading LaVine, see what, I mean, I just don't know what you can really get from him at this point. Like, that would actually make it worth it. Like, Markkanen.
Kevin Love, you will, I 100% guarantee you, if you offer him to the Cavs, yeah, they will give you a very gently used Kevin Love.
I mean, with Lowry and, like, Wendell Carter Jr., like, I mean, Lowry, he has to step up. Like, obviously, he'll be up for an extension next offseason after his third year. Like, Ricky and I were talking, like, what would you give? Like, what would you try to give him? Like, we were like, maybe 460, but like, he's not going to say yes to that. So, like, he'll probably be back for year four, and then Carter will be back for year three. Like, you're probably just going to run it back with most of these same young guys. Like, we'll see what happens with Chris Dunn in restricted free agency. We'll see what happens with Otto. Like, if he opts in, if maybe they try to trade him for something else, change something up there. Try to sign a couple, like, cheap vets, because I don't think they'll have much cap space. There's obviously not the free agent market this next summer is not going to be that great. So, like, I don't know if they can really make, like, any big splashes. Like, they might just be playing for 2021 like everybody else and probably strike out again, which is what they've done before. But I don't know. It's just hard to see them making, like, any, like, drastic moves with their personnel unless they really feel like, oh, maybe we'll trade Zach LaVine or unless they think they just have to start. Like, it might depend on how the rest of the season goes. If they can at least show some – if they keep beating bad teams and, like, maybe they get a few wins here and there. Even if they fall short of the playoffs, maybe they think, well, like, we started showing more as the season went on. Like, we didn't have Otto Porter, so we're just going to run this back, maybe bring in another veteran or two and see if we can kind of run this back. And with another year of development, then we'll take that next step, which I know a lot of Bulls fans would be upset, especially if Boylan's back, especially if the front office doesn't go anywhere. Like, that's been my kind of thing, is, like, I worry that they're going to do just enough where they think the status quo is totally fine. Because, like, I'm just not really sure what, like, how they get from, like, one of the better bad teams. Like, I called them yesterday. Like, they're, like, the best bad team because they can beat other bad teams, but they can't actually beat good teams. So, like, how do they get from, like, that level to, like, actually competitive? I'm not totally sure. Like I said, luck plays a huge role. Maybe another star. Maybe there's a star or two that becomes disgruntled in the next year or two. There always are. There's always guys that hit the market that you don't really expect. So they have some decent young guys that they could possibly package in a trade like that. They're pretty sure they have most of their draft picks. Maybe they'll get another draft pick from if they trade a Thad Young or something like that. So I don't know. There's kind of in a weird spot.
It makes me laugh because the similarities between our two teams it cracks me up. Like from the questions top down, obviously with ownership and just – always have questions with the front office. There's also the similarities where both teams had one player, the best player of his generation that got them their titles. They had one other successful run with a point guard and a big man, but never really got over the hump and always ran into the best player of that generation. The similarities kind of crack me up between the two teams, but you got the bigger city and the bigger market, so you at least have some hope when it comes to free agency. I feel like team building philosophy and how someone feels about what you need to do to construct a contender really comes down to one question. Like I feel like I can figure it out by asking somebody this question, which is, are you afraid of or do you not want your team to be in the middle? Because my big thing is I want the Cavs to shoot for the middle. I want them to become kind of like that Atlanta Hawks or Lowry and DeRozan Raptors and figure it out from there. Get to a baseline level of competence and don't worry about having that contending roster locked up early on and doing that through the draft. Where do you kind of stand on that?
So especially with the new lottery rules, I feel like being in the middle is not quite as bad. Like, especially, I guess middle, depending if you're talking about like Raptors, like a 50 win team. Like, no, like I'm not like a tank or like championship or like tank mindset. Definitely not that. Like, and like I said, especially with these new lottery rules, like, especially this year, like a lot of people were like, have been low. Like if the Bulls, like if they somehow got the 8th seed, I mean, if they, I don't even know, like whatever. But like, oh, like there's no, like you shoot for the 8th seed, like that's nothing. That's something. Well, it's like you have to get there somehow. Like you're not going to go from like the very bottom and then go straight to the top. Like you have to build something that's decent. And then something will take you to that next level, whether it's you get lucky in the draft again, or you swing a big trade, or sign the big free agent. So obviously you do kind of have to get to the middle first, unless you get LeBron James coming back to your team, like happened with the Cavs. But obviously it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen with the Bulls. Giannis is not going to come to the Bulls in 2021. Like, it's just not going to happen. So like,
you're not signing Anthony Davis this summer?
No, Anthony Davis is not coming home. He's not leaving the Lakers, not coming to the Bulls this summer, no matter what people want to think. So, yeah, I mean, obviously at this point, the Bulls probably have to bank on, like, that's what they're trying to bank on, these young guys. They have to get to a point where they're a lower-level playoff team, and then they do that, whether they package these young guys and turn them into a legit star, whether they draft, they get lucky in the draft later in the mid-late in the draft, like this year. I guess if they get lucky, if they miss the playoffs, maybe they. I mean, I guess this draft is horrible, so I don't know if that's necessarily the right way to look at it. But yeah,
it's definitely a very depressing draft. Maybe maybe you'll luck out, get the first overall pick, and take Wiseman, who is a poor man's Marvin Bagley.
Totally. That sounds great. But yeah, I if you're in like the middle for a while and you're winning, like I feel like the kind of like the Pistons, like if you're like at like mid 30s or like low 40s. Just kind of doing that for several years. Like, obviously you don't really want to be there, but for right now, I mean, if the Bulls won 40 games, I'd be thrilled. Maybe like if they get there, I mean, they're not going to hit that this year, but like if the Bulls next year, if they got to 500 a little over, like that'd be a pretty good step for them. So like, it's not always the worst place to be. I guess it just kind of depends on where you're at in your rebuild track. And again, I'm definitely not like, you have to tank, or you like have to be like a legit title contender.
You got to bring back Vinny Del Negro. He'll bring you back to 41-41. Yes. That's one of the most reliable things ever is Vinny Del Negro's ability to get to 41-41. I feel like the thing is that seems like something that so many fans fear is being that Portland or the Atlanta Hawks that never really gone anywhere. But I feel like you get to that point, and then you start being aggressive. Like you can't be content with being at that stage, but that's where you want to consolidate assets and try to cash in on getting a star. And it also just elevates how you're viewed as a franchise. Like, it makes it easier to bring in supporting players, because even if they don't feel like they're going to contend for a title, they know that there is a baseline of competence where you are going to display them in their best role. You're going to make them look good. And if it doesn't lead to opportunities with that team, it's going to lead to other opportunities, which is so important for role players. I just feel like the all or nothing kind of view of team building, it really contributes to just kind of the hopelessness that a lot of fan bases and a lot of fans can feel, especially when you look at the modern NBA, where so much of the free agent game comes down to, hey, I want to play in this glamour market with my friend.
Yep, absolutely. And hopefully now, like the Hamptons 5 Warriors are gone, and like, because I think that probably contributed to as well. Like, well, the Warriors are here. Like, what's the point? Like, we're not going to win a title. Blah blah. I mean, obviously there are really, like, the Lakers are great, the Bucks look great, the Clippers are great, but it's not. I mean, it still does not feel like as hopeless. And like, you never know what's going to happen. You never know with injuries. Like, everyone. Like, I mean, last year, I mean, Clay and KD go down, and the Raptors come out and win a title. They take the chance. They had a great team. They take a chance. They get Kawhi Leonard, and they win the damn title. Like, that's like a great example. Like, you're kind of in that middle for a while. You're close. A lot of people want that team to blow it up. Instead, they get Kawhi freaking Leonard, and they win the damn title. Like, that's great. That's a great example of just kind of keeping at it, and obviously making other good moves. You draft a guy like Siakam. You get lucky there, and Kawhi Leonard becomes available. You take advantage. You make a big, bold move, and it works out. And that's what I guess you got to hope you can do. As you said, a lot of it is definitely luck and timing and stuff like that. But, it means if you're really doing the all-or-nothing thing, like, how do you actually enjoy your team? Because, like, only one team's going to win. And if you're, like, rooting for, like, tanking all the time, like, tanking also backfires on plenty of teams. Like, you see a ton of teams. Like, the Kings have been terrible forever, and the Magic were really bad for a while, and they're basically, like, right in the middle now. So, like, there's no, like, foolproof way to do it. And, like, if you're just going to be, like, well, you're either a title contender or you got to really suck, like, that's just I feel like you're just not going to have that much fun rooting for your team.
Yeah, the journey is more fun than the championship. And I think you touched on an important point, and something that I strongly believe is the Warriors being constructed the way that they were caused a level of desperation. When it's this situation, I think a lot of players, they're competitive, right? Like they yep. want to go out, they want to prove themselves. If you don't need to have 3-4 stars on a team, if you have a good supporting cast and hey, if I get one other player and it's just a league of big twos, that's more the kind of the traditional NBA that we grew up with, right? Like that's something that we can understand. I can understand 2009 LeBron or 2008, I guess, going after Michael Redd and Ray Allen and trying to recruit those guys. I think that with the Warriors being broken up, and I just hope to God that this kind of sabbatical season they have doesn't net them a top pick that they're able to go out and get a Karl Anthony Towns or a Giannis or any of that bullshit. But I hope that with the NBA kind of being a little bit more normal, it's going to kind of change the decision-making of players. Because I do think that it can be tough for fans to kind of keep that hope alive. And I really, really hope that there's some sort of a recalculation there.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Yeah. It definitely did feel just hopeless at times with those Warriors teams. And now, hopefully the Giannis stuff is already like, you kind of laugh at it. It's also just very super annoying. I mean, when they were playing the other day and it's like, Giannis is on a Bucks team that's basically on pace for 70 wins. Like they're a title favorite. And the people and all the talk is about how he's going to go to the Warriors in a couple of years. It's like, please, please stop.
You know what? We got to change the conversation. We need to change the conversation to Steph needs to go to the Bucks.
Exactly. There you go.
That's what really needs to happen there, because who's on the 70-win team now? Like, I don't want to laugh at it because I laughed at the Kevin Durant stuff, and then Warriors writers would start to tell me, no, it's kind of real, and I would just get gradually a little more terrified. I do think it's possible, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this. I think that people still haven't tuned all the way into this regular season, because we did the hypotheticals throughout that Warriors era. Well, you know, if this breaks right, look at what Houston's doing, etc. And none of those hypotheticals matter. I think that a captivating postseason where you have a lot of teams having competitive series where the matchups really matter and how these teams are built. Because even though some of the style across the league has changed and obviously gravitated towards the three, I feel like there actually is differences in teams, and how the seeding breaks down in the East is really going to matter. Same thing out West. I think a captivating playoffs could help kind of kickstart some interest in the regular season again.
I would hope so. And obviously, like, Zion coming back yesterday was like a huge jolt. Like, we'll see how much that carries over. But I think that was just really nice to see just a lot of people just excited about a regular season game for the New Orleans Pelicans. Like, that was really cool. We'll see. And then in terms of the playoffs, the Eastern Conference has 6 damn good teams. And in the West, obviously, the Thunder have been a nice surprise as well. So that's 7 darn good teams. Well, I guess we'll see who gets the 8th seed. They'll probably get the stupid Spurs again. That damn streak will never end. But yeah, I mean, the playoffs should be great. Like I said, with all these really good teams, like you said, and you mentioned the thing about how, like, a lot of teams are with the analytics and gravitating towards threes, and that's a whole other conversation. But like, I can't remember who I saw was tweeting this today, but like, while a lot of teams do that, because I think it was talking about that shot chart. I think Goldsberry tweeted that shot chart, like how the shot, like the,
right,
all that stuff. But like, that while that's true, like, I feel like a lot of teams are obviously, they're built differently, and how those teams like get to those certain shots are way different. So yeah, there'll be clashes of styles. Like some teams, the Sixers are a very unique team. I mean, and the Lakers, a lot of them depend on their size and all that kind of stuff. And then, I mean, the Bucks have Giannis, and they just spread the floor for him, and he's pushing the
Giannis pace is Shaq. Degrees. He's modern day Shaq.
Right, exactly. So like, there's stuff. While a lot of teams do end up with like similar shot profiles and all that kind of stuff, and everyone's trying to optimize with that, they get to them in a different way, and it looks different. The style's different. So hopefully that should mean that, like you said, the matchups and how certain teams match up better with others. And I mean, the playoffs should be great. Like, 'cause I hope most of these guys stay healthy, and I hope we get some of these really good playoff matchups, besides maybe a few of those first round ones, like if the Bulls or this horrible Nets team, and then in that first round against the Bucks will be a pure slaughter, but the second round and beyond should be awesome. Now a few of those first round series should be great as well.
Yeah, it's funny because both conferences just look so competitive through like the first seven seeds, and then it's just
there's eight.
Well, you know, that's probably not going to be ideal. I do want to finish this off with the most important question. Obviously, the name of the podcast, Cash Considerations. Jordan Bell or Cash?
Oh, God. I mean, I guess now you'd say Cash because Jordan Bell is bad, but this goes deeper than Jordan Bell. That the Bulls traded Kyle Korver for cash considerations right back in the day. Last season they made legitimately, I think, three or four cash considerations trades. And the Jordan Bell thing obviously was a thing as well, even though I didn't even care about Jordan Bell, the player. It was just the Bulls started off a rebuild. They traded Jimmy Butler. And then that same night they traded a draft pick. I mean, it's second-round draft pick, whatever. You can say second-round draft picks don't mean anything, but sometimes they do. The Bulls could have drafted Dylan Brooks is doing really well with the Grizzlies. He went like 40-something in that draft. The Bulls said their draft board was dried up at number 38, so they traded a pick at the beginning of a rebuild for cash considerations. Like, so, yeah, it doesn't even come down to Jordan Bell. It was just the whole principle of the matter of trading a pick at the beginning of your rebuild for cash. They're like, I mean, the Bulls aren't strapped for cash here. Like, they're doing fine there. It's like that and just like all the other, some of the trades, and the Bulls being generally, despite playing in Chicago, the third biggest market, not rarely paying the tax, being just kind of not really forward thinking and just in terms of like investing in a lot of stuff. Like, they do have a new practice facility that's nice now. But still, like, we've always made jokes about the Bulls being the financial champions because of not paying the tax despite being where they are and all that kind of stuff. So long history of Bulls just kind of being kind of cheap asses. And then the Jordan Bell thing was just like kind of like the cherry on top. And then this last year with all the cash considerations trade as well. Luckily, we had already been cash consideration, so it worked out perfectly for us.
Man, I still remember draft night where everybody freaked out. How could the league let this happen? Jordan Bell to the Warriors. This is actually the move that broke the NBA, and it didn't quite work out that way. That's one of the few differences, though, between the Cavs and Bulls. The Cavs have absolutely no problem spending money. For all of the flaws and reasons why Dan Gilbert is problematic, the man is very, very liberal with his checkbook. It's the only thing he's liberal with.
Yeah.
Jason, I appreciate you coming on so much. Thank you for filling in for Carter. Really, really do appreciate your insight. As I mentioned, Cash Considerations podcast, if it isn't drilled into your head at this point already, folks, I don't know what to tell you. Anything else you'd like to plug that you got coming on?
Excuse me. Follow me on Twitter @Bulls_J. Find my work, bloggable, SB Nation Bulls blog. Still do some stuff there. Bet Chicago/Bet Indiana, do a little betting stuff with all the betting stuff coming up big. That's always fun. Some NBA stuff there. I do Bull stuff for Forbes, and then also check out clutchpoints.com. I'm editor there, do some stuff there as well. So I'm all over the place, fun stuff. And as you said, Cash Considerations, another great Blue Wire podcast. Shout out to Blue Wire Pods. They're great for us. Great stuff. They're awesome. So yeah.
Thanks, yeah, check out Blue Wire Pods, all of you listeners. There's likely a podcast for whatever your interest is. So support the mothership. We really do appreciate it. And if you want to support either of our podcasts, the most important thing you can do is leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. Yeah. If you want to support the Chase Down podcast directly, you can do so by subscribing to our premium feed. It's basically like Patreon, only you're supporting us directly. So just go to Chase Down Premium, 99 cents for the first month, $5 a month after that. If you want to be part of our Discord chat or kind of exclusive Cavs space, you can send a screenshot of your review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. We'd be more than happy to send you a link. No matter how you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it, even though I can't talk. It means the world to us. Carter should be back next week. Hopefully he's in Minneapolis the week after I was there, because he is just absolutely the worst. Jason, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you to all our listeners. And until next time, go Cavs.